going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And we welcome you to the last edition of Meet Me at Mutual for 2019. Don't get your hopes up. We're not going anywhere. We'll be back for 2020 for sure. But this is the end of the decade, if you will, depending on how you measure your decade. I'm your host, David Choptaw. C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter with me. As always, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt Red Bird and A Medlock 1 on Twitter. Before we get into the little bit of Cardinal news, and we want to kind of look back at the year a little bit and a few things here and there, but before we get to anything, I really want to say thanks to everybody that's been listening. This year, we averaged over, I think, 140 listens a year, a show, which is like 20 or so more than we had last year. You know, we haven't had anything under 100 all year long, which is a first. So season 5 has been really great, and it's because y'all have been great to tell us that you enjoyed listening to the show and that you keep listening to the show. So that's a great thing. And so I just wanted to, before we got too far into anything, I wanted to really express, I know Alan agrees with me here, that express our appreciation for everybody that's supported us this year. And we hope to do this again all year long next year, and hopefully the numbers will continue to increase. So if you do like the show, I'll do the little plug here that you can go rate and review it, and that'll let other people know about it. You can share, you know, you can retweet our when we put the links out, let people know about the show if you enjoy it. But no matter what, we just wanted to say thank you for everything. Hope everybody has had a good holiday. Alan, I hope you had a good Christmas, and as we turn into the new year, that you're looking forward to 2020.
Absolutely. I had a great Christmas. Had a good time with family, and the kids made off well, and that's always good to see. And, you know, now I'm notoriously bad for that calendar changes, and I'm ready for warm weather, and I'm ready for baseball. You know, football's not even over with, and, you know, here I am getting the balls and the gloves and bats out.
Yeah, well, the way the weather has been until about today, you would be definitely – forgiven for thinking that spring was already here, or at least around here in the 60s.
It was 70 on Christmas here.
Yeah.
In Tulsa.
Yeah, it was that here too. So the Cardinals, however, have not quite come out of their winter hibernation, if you will. Since we've spoken, really the only move that the Cardinals have made, and I say really, I think it is the only move that the Cardinals have made, is they signed, and I had, you know, out of all this time, I still have not heard this man's name pronounced yet, so I'm gonna say it the way it looks. It's gonna be completely wrong, and then we'll just call him KK the rest of the way.
Yeah.
But it's Kwang Hung Kim, I believe. I don't believe. I just know that's wrong. Anyway, KK comes over from the Korean leagues on a 2-year, $8 million contract. He's a depth piece. It feels like he's a guy that can relieve. He could start, you know, it's an interesting move. I don't know that it really moves the needle a whole lot, but, you know, what are you thinking on this
one? You know, I was glad to see it because it looks like they have a little bit of flexibility to figure some things out with Martinez, not have to speed up the process. I expected them to get somebody. Like I kind of thought that Keiko would be in the works for them this year, just for to get some innings and to force the hand with Martinez a little bit. I think this is probably a sign that he's probably ahead of where they expected him to be, but I look at this as more of a competition to, hey, if you want to get back into the rotation, this is the bar you're going to have to set. Now, I stole that line from this past week's best podcast in baseball with Gould and Fredrickson, which is really good, by the way. And they make a pretty good point about how this worked out for the Cardinals. They have a great track record of the Asian players. That's promising. I don't know. I don't know why something tells me that they're pretty content with Martinez in the bullpen. And I don't know how I feel about that, because I think they kind of pigeonhole some guys and it's kind of backfired on them. But with the results they've got with the Pacific type players and on the short-term deal, it's seems like a pretty easy gamble to make.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a lot of upside for the Cardinals, and given the contract status, not a lot of downside. You're right. I don't know if I would say the Cardinals want Martinez to be in the bullpen or anything like that, but I think you're right that they are comfortable if he's there, even though I think everybody feels like the best use of Carlos Martinez is as a starter. But if the shoulder's not going to hold up, if there's some sort of, you know, health issues, whether real or expected, or, you know, because, you know, that we've heard at times, we've heard conflicting stories, whether Martinez wants to be in the rotation, whether he's afraid to be in the rotation because of health issue, afraid he's good, he can't really let loose. Who knows what on any of that is. But everything, you know, we've seen a lot from Carlos Martinez on Instagram this winter, you know, working out and stuff. It really feels like he's trying to prove that he's ready to be in the rotation. But I can't blame the Cardinals for picking up insurance. I mean, they just really need to do that. Like you said, Keuchel made a lot of sense. But especially since I have to look at Kyle's lists and stuff, I don't feel like they've got the pitching depth coming up, like the top end pitching depth. They don't have a Flaherty. They don't have a what could have been an Alex Reyes coming up. So even if, you know, you're blocking somebody, things can work out. You've got, you know, what happens if Adam Wainwright's not good? You know, that's this kind of thing.
No. And I completely agree with you. And, you know, a concern, I do think their pitching is going to be really good. But I know of at least two, Flaherty and Hudson, pitched a career high in innings last year. And I think Michaelis may have. And that's kind of dangerous. You know, that's kind of a dangerous spot to be in, especially with the, you know, you bring back a Wainwright on a 1-year deal. And like I said, where I'm a Hudson fan, you know, there's a lot of guys that think that, you know, he ran into a little bit of luck last year. And, you know, I felt like a starter made a lot of sense. And I'm not completely convinced that this wasn't made for him to start. You know, I don't know, but I would rather see Martinez in the rotation, but no, I agree with you. I mean, I felt like they could have added and not necessarily blocked anyone.
Yeah, actually Michaelis pitched 16 fewer innings in 19 than he did in 18, so
okay, I wasn't certain because I couldn't remember if he missed any starts this year, and that's why I said that. Nope. I was like,
He went 32 starts both years. He just didn't get as deep in the game on a regular basis.
We saw some early outings.
Yeah, there was, you know, like the one in Texas. He pitched quite a number of innings over in the Japanese league, but it's hard to know how that translates to some degree. They feel pretty good about their metrics, their algorithms, their evaluation tools for Asian baseball. Whether it is guys like Myles Michaelis, who, you know, American over there pitching and may have some experience, maybe not, or guys like KK, Sung Won Oh, others that, you know, they feel comfortable there. And so I guess it's not too much of a surprise. It's also cheaper, which, you know, take that for what it's worth. It's a conversation that I'm sure a lot of people would like to have and continue to have. So, it's a fine move. It's a good insurance move. And when you're talking about max innings, you know, people like Hudson and Flaherty, which you're right, you know, they did pitch a lot of innings. I have almost the opposite concern with Carlos Martinez and the fact that he only threw 48 innings. I mean, can you go, or I don't even know, it was 48 innings, 40 to 48, somewhere that I can remember exactly. Do you go from that to, I don't know if he can go from that to 200 innings. You know, is this a situation? It feels like it gives him a situation for some flexibility where Kim can make, you know, 10 starts a year and the rest of the time in the bullpen. And maybe there's some times where, you know, Carlos takes a, you know, they skip him in the rotation a couple of times, let him come in and pitch some innings. Something like that. Somehow they map it out. I'm not saying they're going to go to a six-man rotation because I don't believe that at all. But to be able to ease the burden on Carlos while still letting him be mainly a starter, feels like that's a possibility. Now we'll see. I don't, you know, you get the extra man this next coming year at 26, but you know, how does this look for the bullpen? You know, I don't know. I haven't sat down and looked at the roster and tried to figure all that out, but it feels like a solid move. It's nothing exciting. It's nothing deep. You know, the Cardinals just aren't going to do those moves. They have done them in the past, but I think maybe in an old best podcast in baseball, maybe in a different podcast, I don't remember, but pointing out the fact that the Cardinals, you know, made their big moves like Ozuna and Goldschmidt when they were out of the playoffs. Well, now they've made it to the playoffs and they don't feel like they need to make the big move.
You said it in one of the early offseason podcast of, you know, now may be the time that you need to push down the pedal, you know, and really go for it because you're in a division that's pretty winnable. I still think you're probably the best team in the division now, but you're playing with fire on not only the rotation, but the lineup, probably more the lineup than anything by trying to just, you know, throw stuff against the wall, see what sticks, essentially. But yeah, you're right. It gets a little bit frustrating because I felt like there was, well, I guess they, you know, they had pitching of every price point that you could have gotten, and they went to, you know, probably about as low as you're going to get. I mean, I don't complain about contracts that much, but I felt like Keuchel was an overpay, you know, in Chicago. And I'm not sure what the Matt Boyds you know, I don't know what that trade value is worth, but yeah, it's sometimes they can be a little. They're in this position because they're conservative, but then it's frustrating to be in this position because they are conservative, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't feel like, you know, we've talked about it. They don't want to put the pedal down. And
yeah,
the division isn't making them do that. I mean, the Cubs are looking to, you know, they can't add anybody. They've talked about being really up against it to the point that they're talking about, you know, I don't know that they will, but, you know, there's still that Chris Bryant thing sticking out there. They might actually trade Chris Bryant. The Brewers seem to have stepped back. The Reds are making moves, but they still have so much room to gain. You know, I mean, right now, you're right. The Cardinals are almost by default the best team in the division. And, I mean, they did win 91 games last year, and they're bringing a lot of the same guys back. But, you know, again, I've talked about this before. I worry about the fact that the defense was so great and the pitching was so great and the base running was so great. You know, if they take even a half step back in some of those categories, that could be enough to, you know, lose them two or three games. And suddenly you're starting to look at 87, 88 wins. That may not be enough. That probably isn't enough to win a division. And it may not be, you know, you put you in that wild card mix where you could be looking on the outside, looking in again.
Yeah, very true. And it's one of those to where, yeah, we kind of know the Milwaukee situation to where they kind of had to let some guys go, but they're going to be creative and improve. I mean, we've seen that. I mean, they'll add and they'll do some stuff late and they probably won't be as bad as we think they are. I mean, there was a thought early in the offseason that like, well, they're going to have to rebuild, but I don't know if you can do that with the clock on Yelich.
Yeah.
So they'll add and they'll probably be a lot better than we expect them to be. Yeah, and it gets a little scary. You're right, because you're thinking they've made up no ground offensively. And when you look at some of the situations and you look at projections and you look at maybe what Ozuna would do or a Castellanos or even a Dickerson, you're just like, that would have been a nice add because then it you have a little bit of certainty with those guys. Well, now it's going to be a what we're going to be told is an open competition in the outfield, and I'm really not sure how open that's going to be. Yeah. That's where you get a little bit – I get a little concerned. I mean, you know, guys were posting what they thought may be the opening day lineup, and I would – where they need a cleanup hitter in the worst way – yeah, I am afraid it may be DeJong, and I'm would not be surprised in the slightest if your opening day left fielder was Edmund, and I'm not so certain that's the way I want to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, we can transition this a little bit because the next thing we want to talk about it gets into that outfield situation, but there is a you feel like. I think we've talked about it before. You feel like two of the three spots are already kind of taken. I mean, it'd be really surprising if somebody unseated Harrison Bader, and I don't think anybody can be able to unseat Dexter Fowler, at least not for starting for opening day.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking about May or June, if Fowler's not hitting, then maybe, but it's probably going to take till May or June. And who knows how many games you'd lose in between there that you could have not.
Sure.
But, you know, the Reds today signed – again, I'm not going to get into names because I don't know them.
Yeah.
Japanese outfielder that was coming over. which, again, I'm terrible with American names, so I can't do any other languages as well. But that seems to have, and I don't know for sure, I don't know all of what Cincinnati's done, but it really seems to have closed a door for Marcelo Ozuna, who that seemed to be probably the best spot that he could get, right? You know, Cincinnati seemed like a place that he could play. And now you start looking around, and I mean, he's still out there, and Castellanos is still out there. Yasiel Puig is still out there. You start wondering about those markets. Is this a situation where the years start coming down, and maybe he just says, hey, I'm going to take a one-year deal? I mean, it would look bad if he takes one that's less than the qualifying offer. But if he's only wanting a one, if he only gets down to where he says, I'm just going to take a 1 year deal and enters free agency again next year, I don't know that the Cardinals pass that up. I think they have to go after that because there's not a real good, I mean, as much as we want to see Dylan Carlson play out in the outfield and he still may get a shot, I think if you can add a guy like Ozuna on a short-term contract, I think they'd be probably kind of negligent not to.
I completely agree with that. And I mean, I think they've got a price point and an idea about what they would do. And I think they probably had a pretty good idea that if this market fell through, then it'd probably be a possibility. I could see some of these turn into a surprise move every once in a while. Texas still hasn't done anything. And I think that may be the panic move that we see next on somebody, but I could see that being Castellanos really, really quickly. Yeah. You know, other than I say Texas hadn't done anything. Texas hadn't added a bat. You know, I mean, all we heard was if it's not Rendon, it's going to be Donaldson. And Donaldson priced himself out really quickly to where you think that they're still looking for some pop. I could see it being one of those two, being Ozuna or Castellanos. But that is kind of the only market that's mainly an obvious where they're going to add. You know, everybody else is kind of be a surprise at this point. I kind of thought Ozuna would walk. I think everybody did. They do have to match that production, but production from somewhere. I personally like Ozuna. Anybody that listens to the show knows that I like Ozuna more than I ever expected to, just because I think Ozuna's a good player and not necessarily didn't come over and match the numbers that they probably thought 2017 was going to be that jumping point where he's going to go off from there. But he is solid and he does still put up numbers, and that's going to be a void, whether it's Ozuna or someone else, they're going to have to put up those numbers. And I know that we want to say that O'Neill could probably do it, but, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's still a heck of a lot of gamble. So I think you're right. If it's if the years keep dropping and the money keeps dropping, I mean, I think it's – you're right. Negligence is the best word that they don't you know, pursue that a little bit more. I saw the Bowden article that came out on Sunday, and it was talking about how his market's gone up to where he's expecting 5 years in the $100 million range at this point. And I was like, I don't know if I've ever seen that, you know what I mean, out of him. But, you know, it is what it is. Somebody seems, if they'll play it, they'll pay it. But if not, I mean, I think today it's more feasible that you could probably see him coming back if there was any intention to bring him back. That it might happen, or if they were going to let him walk regardless of what happens.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to some degree, they want that draft pick. I mean, that's just the way the Cardinals operate. But, yeah. I mean, we saw Kimbrel, we saw Keuchel fall to the point where they didn't have a draft pick attached anymore because they didn't sign till June. And Ozuna seems to be a guy that could be that way, right? I mean, he seems like, with all the other outfielders out there, you know, if he didn't want to sign, he could easily, you know, fall, and they wouldn't get a draft pick there either. So,
yeah,
I think there comes a point where they've got to engage there. And I think if they could get him for a year or maybe even two, I mean, I don't know that they'd be excited about two because Fowler's under contract for two more. But yeah. You know, if they could do that or an option for a second year or something, they might do that. But, you know, at the right price. And, I mean, they're not going to go extravagant, but they do. So, you know, they could raise their payroll a little bit to pay him $15, $20 million if they wanted to for one season or two. Yeah, it's tough not to see that. And then I know it makes a mess. You know, with Carlson, with the 842 guys that need to be on the roster next year. But,
yeah,
I mean, some of those guys are going to be some of those guys should be traded. I hate to say they will be because I've said that before, and John Mozeliak says, no, they don't have to be. But it's really, really hard to see how Tyler O'Neill and Randy Arozarena and Lane Thomas and all the other guys, you know, the regular starters, all these guys that – they all kind of need to be in the major leagues. They've all kind of proven everything at Memphis if they, you know, and you can't have them all. So it feels like at least a couple of those guys are going to be gone. Maybe it's for minor league prospects. Maybe it's for cash. Like they got rid of Adolis Garcia. I mean, when they signed him, I don't know, but it feels like some of those guys have got to be out of the organization. And if they do that, you know, again, I don't think they trade them to free up room for Ozuna, but if Ozuna is available at the right price, I think they'd do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I would hope they would. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of how I feel. I mean, when you hear, I mean, I think it'd be pretty easy for them to swallow 2 years, $24-25 million, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. You mean,
you know, it's one of those, you're just like, yeah, no. I'm talking about, you know, if it was maybe that you get to that 12 to 13 or $14 million per year deal, I think that you almost have to do that.
Yeah. If he's down there, because I mean, they offered him the qualifying offer, which is what, 17.2 or something like that. So anything under that,
sure.
They have to do that because they were willing for 17.
It's funny because, you know, like Jeff Jones says, he expects Ozuna to be this year's Moustakas, mm-hmm. to get much undervalue.
And he may.
And I was like, yeah.
And I mean, Ozuna could bet on himself, as we've heard the term before, and say, hey, he's 28 years old. He's finally, in theory, healthy. You know, he wasn't healthy his first year in St. Louis. I don't know about last year. He could go out there and say, I'm going to have a good year, and I don't know who's free agents next year. It may not matter. Of course, you're also 1 year closer to the CBA coming up, and that could be a problem as well. But he could say, yeah, I'm going to do that, and then I'll come back out next year, and I'll get my big money then. I don't know. I mean, he's talked about wanting to play in St. Louis. He's talked about wanting to be there for, you know, Yadier Molina's, in theory, his last season, which it's not going to be his last season, and wanting to play with Wainwright, wanting to play with some of the other guys. And, you know, if that's all true, you know, maybe he does. I'm agreeing with you. Bowden's 5 years, $100 million just doesn't seem, if that's the case, then there's no way the Cardinals are involved. And that,
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The Cardinals aren't involved. Like it's like Bowden had this article here, and he has the Cardinals, Braves, Reds, and Giants involved. Well, if the Cardinals aren't involved, and the Reds are now not out, I don't see the Giants spending that kind of money, and the Braves probably aren't unless they can get, you know, Donaldson. So I don't see how it works.
Yeah, they agreed. Well, and that's the thing is whenever I read that thing and thought about Texas, I was like, if they weren't going over 4 years for Donaldson, where they obviously have a hole, they're not going over four for Ozuna. So I was like, I don't know where that would fit. And you're right. I was like, the Giants wouldn't do that. And, you know, I don't see the Braves doing that. I mean, I feel like their money is tied into Donaldson to see what he does, and then they're going to turn and figure out a trade for one of the other third basemen at this point, or they've got in-house options. You know, they've got Camargo and Riley, who, you know, I think a lot of teams would want. One of them, you know what I'm saying, would be all right fallbacks. So I don't know. I just don't see where the market's going to be for that. And we'll probably be surprised and see that, you know, the Mets do it tomorrow or something, you know, just something stupid, you know, it'll happen. But, you know, I mean, I will say this too. Bowden's writing I don't want this to look like a detriment to the professional writers, but Bowden is writing for the Athletic for a reason, because he was a terrible general manager in Cincinnati. Just ask any Reds fan. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
and Nationals fans too, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So I don't know how much, maybe we've given him too much pub on here already, but yeah, I was just like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, the more names that come off that list and sign to some of these teams that we think are in the market for an Ozuna, I think it makes a whole heck of a lot more sense for him to come back. And I'm not necessarily against it. I haven't been from the beginning. There's a part of me too that A, I feel like they need that production, and B, I would like to see the wheels that would start turning to fit him into the roster and see what else would move around. You know, that's there's some interest to that in me as well.
Yeah, would be interesting for sure. All right, well, we'll have to wait and see, because I mean, there's not, and this is the thing. John Mozeliak comes out and says there's a whole lot of time left in the off season, which is somewhat true, but on the flip side of that, you know, winter warmup is in 2 weeks.
Uh huh.
You know, and they have made moves around winter warmup, but after winter warmup, you know, it's 4 weeks until pitchers and catchers report. Most of these guys are going to be down there anyway. I just kind of feel like if you don't make a move, by warmup time, I just don't see it being a big move unless you get into spring training and, you know, Ozuna still hasn't signed, and then you make a move then. But man, I don't know that.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of this offseason's already moved along, especially since the market's been more active this year than it has been the last couple of years.
Yeah, sure. And you know what? It was funny. He was on with Ackerman on Sunday, and I don't think it would be anything huge. I think the biggest move they would make at this point would be bringing Ozuna back. But I'm not so certain that they are going to camp with what they have. You know, I feel like there may be another move in them to kind of clear some space, maybe more than anything. I kind of got that feeling whenever he was on there. But he was maybe playing those games, because the last couple times that he's been on, it was almost certain that nothing would happen. I'll be honest, until the press conference with, you know, bringing on the pitcher last week, I thought they were set. I thought the roster was set, and that's what they were going to do after they added a pitcher. When they brought up that they're still engaged with Ozuna, I was surprised by that. And I know that it's kind of lip service a little bit, and it may ultimately play out that way. But whenever they brought that up, I was like, you know what? They may be kicking the tires on several guys. And this offense that we think that they're going to go with, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case. And I kind of hold out hope that is the situation, to where they can bring an Ozuna back, or they can add a bat and maybe have a little bit of clarity to this and make – the way that I look at the Carlson deal is make him make the decision tough for you, you know, and I feel like he's going to have to out hit a list of probably seven or eight guys to make the roster. And I don't know. And I think it would have to be way, I mean, like a Pujols type, you can't leave him back type spring. So I think that there's a lot of moving parts to that. I still, it just seems like such a convoluted way to go in and figure some things out. But I don't see how you can compete with, you know, this 6, 7, 8 names that we could name right off the top of our head, knowing full well that Fowler's going to have to play just because of the contract. And I honestly, as the lineup sits right now, I feel like you have to play Fowler because he's going to be one of your better options.
I mean, he might be. I don't know. I mean, again, as much as he bounced back last year, he still wasn't league average in OPS plus.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm afraid that the bounce back means that he takes, you know, he kind of comes back a little bit more. So it's, you know, this year, I don't know that he can continue to improve, and maybe he can, I don't know, but I can see it easily being that we saw the best that we're going to see out of Dexter Fowler last year. And that's okay, but not necessarily great. And he kind of went downhill after they put him in the start off in the leadoff spot, so that didn't help either. I don't know. I think you're right. I think, like I said, we talked about it, they'll clear a little bit of roster space, but I'm not holding my breath that it's anything interesting.
Yeah.
All right, we had a couple of people toss us some Twitter questions. We'll hit on them kind of quickly here. First off is from my gateway to Baseball Heaven host, you know, Tara Wellman. And she asked, of course, she wanted us to talk about Colton Wong, but that's usually her gig, so I'm going to leave it for her. I don't know what to say about Colton that hadn't been said. But she said, who's the closer in 2020? And I think that's kind of an interesting question as well, because there's some situations, and we've talked about them here, you know, Carlos Martinez, you know, the outfield, and now closer with Jordan Hicks coming back at the end of the year, that there's situations that you need that insurance or you need something in case something doesn't go right. Who starts off as the closer next year?
I'm going to reluctantly say Martinez. Just because I feel I don't know if that's necessarily what they – and I don't even know if that's true. I was going to say it's not necessarily what they want, but I'm not so certain that's the case. I do think it's – I think that will probably be the option most of the year. And I know – and that kind of bothers me to say, because Martinez I cannot – to think of Flaherty and Martinez at the top of a rotation is exciting. And I would love to see a bounce back to where he's able to do that. I don't know. It's going to be a kind of a show me deal. My biggest concern is that they're going to pigeonhole Helsley into being the closer, and he's never going to truly get a chance to start. And that's one thing that I'm concerned about. You have a Gallegos option. I'm not even sure if I really like that. Just because I kind of like the role that he was in last year. You look at Brebbia, and you know, it's one of those deals to where, you know, he's pitched well. Very few situations where you didn't have a lot of trust in him, and. You know, there's a lot of names out there, but I'm going to say Martinez just because I feel like this is a loaded competition.
You know, I'm going to say Helsley, honestly. And I agree with you because we've seen it. We've seen it with Trevor Rosenthal. We've seen it with Jordan Hicks. We could see it with Helsley. You're right. Sometimes they put them in the bullpen and those guys never get back out, especially when they're in closer roles. If you want to, you know, I know they'll say, well, Adam Wainwright came up as a reliever and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but Adam Wainwright, except for the, you know, obviously 2006 run, but for the most part, he was a middle reliever. He was a guy that could come in and pitch 2 or 3 innings until they needed a closer and really had no choice. And he did pretty well at that. I think once they put somebody into that flamethrower ninth inning role, they don't usually get them out of it. Now, That being said, the organization hasn't shown that they have a real excitement about starting Ryan Helsley, which is disappointing because I think Ryan Helsley deserves some chances to start. But if you're not going to start him, you know, at least give him some sort of important role. Now, you could argue that you'd rather see the ninth inning kind of rotate. You're right. You don't want to put Gallegos and maybe not even Brebbia into a role where they're going to come in at this time and you can't use them in different spots in the game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if I was to guess out of what we've got right now, I still think if they feel like they could trust a guy that has limited experience, but you know, it didn't take him too long to put Horton Hicks in there, and Helsley's stuff may not be quite as explosive as Hicks, but it's not too far behind. So
no, yeah, it, well, if you remember when Hicks' name started gaining a lot of steam, it was always Hicks and Helsley. Mm-hmm. You know, Fernandez was the one that was kind of on the outside looking in on between those two. You know, when Mo brought those two up. Yeah. I kind of feel the same way about Cabrera. I feel like I could see where you're coming from on that because I feel like Cabrera and Helsley made the biggest impressions in the postseason. Yeah. You know, in the bullpen.
Yeah, we'd have to see. We'd have to look at both of them, I guess. But it's the idea of control, especially with Cabrera. You know, you can't afford to have a guy that's going to walk a guy or two in the ninth inning because we know what that's like. We've seen that.
Well, in a health, if he was healthy and they felt like he could stay healthy, I think that would be the knock on Alex Reyes too. You know, is it like, hey, if he could ever get command of the strike zone and not walk so many people, he would be a good candidate in the late innings. But I hate to even talk about Reyes at this point.
I mean, you know, you count for him for nothing and you see what happens. I think that
exactly. I'm hoping to be really, really surprised because of my sights were set so high on him.
But I think best case scenario for Alex Reyes this year is he pitches a lot of sixth and seventh innings for a while, and then maybe he starts getting more like the eighth, or maybe they start stretching him out. I don't know. I mean, if I was to say over under 6.5 starts for Alex Reyes next year, which would you take?
Under.
Under.
Yeah, I would. The thing is, as much as I want to see him in the rotation at some point, I just feel like you're building up a lot of trust back. You're building up a lot of arm strength back, and throwing him into the rotation would hurt him. I would love to see it though.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing.
That's a guy a year. I mean, you start talking about the fact that you know he missed what was it 16 that he missed. All of 16 with the road with this, yeah.
Yeah, it was 16. Yeah,
John, you missed almost all of 17. He's missed a whole bunch of 18. You know, when you factor in the minor leagues stuff, there's not a lot. If he doesn't do any starting in 19, does he ever become a starter?
Yeah, that's a concern that I have.
Yeah.
You talking about big league starts? That's what that was.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I could see him staying a good part of the season the early part of the season in Memphis.
Yeah, because he should still have some options left, I would think.
Yeah, and the thing is, my computer's sitting away from me.
I'll pull it up real quick here at the roster resource graphs. They usually are. Are good at that. Let me see if I would think because he spent, you know, when that year that he's, you know, 16, he's on the major league DL, so he never got option that year. Let's see. Minor leaguers, you should know. I'm good. It's well, let's see. Alex Reyes, yeah, he has two options left, so. He could easily spend a lot of time just making starts. And that may be what he does, at least the beginning of the year. If he can pitch well in Memphis until, you know, June, then maybe he gets the call up and then we see what they do. But they might be asking
that too.
All right, let's move on to the next one from Uncle Frank, our good friend and follower. I think Frank's one of our loyal listeners, and I've seen him right over at Redbird Rants and a couple other places as well. He's asking, and you mentioned, you touched on this a little bit ago, said if the Cardinals don't add another bat, does DeJong hit cleanup? And I don't like DeJong at cleanup, but I don't know that there's anybody else. I don't think they put Goldschmidt there. And, I mean, you're obviously not putting any of the outfielders. I mean, if they were going to give a run to Tyler O'Neill, I could see Tyler O'Neill in that spot. But I don't know that they'll – I don't think they'll give a run to Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah. Yeah, that's – if you – to answer Frank's question, that I think that's probably exactly what will happen. And I don't think that's beneficial to the Cardinals or to DeJong. I wish DeJong would probably stay in that 5-6 spot. And everybody, anybody that's listened to this, to me on this show for 3 years knows that I like that 5 spot to go and just and slug and you just take your hacks. And I think that you can get out of slumps that way. That's why I kind of wish they would have done that with Carpenter last year. But you're right. They may not have anybody else. You know, if you right at the beginning of the offseason, I don't know if you remember, we were talking about a cleanup, and you know what I could honestly see happen in that spot is I could see it being an O'Neill or Matt Carpenter type situation in the cleanup spot. I think there's going to be an effort this year to get Wong to stay at the top of the lineup, and I feel like Edmund's probably going to be there as well. I'm hoping that Edmund's going to be one of those everyday bats in the lineup but plays different positions, with the fact that if he can just out hit, he can do what he did last year, then he's going to be your everyday third baseman essentially. But I do expect to bounce back from Carpenter, so I'm getting a little long-winded on this. But I do, if as things stand right now, I think that that's probably what it would be. I agree, though, that I feel like it would be – I feel like you could – and healthy O'Neill, you probably get the production that you got from Ozuna. I feel that way. You're probably going to get a lot of frustration like you do with DeJong. But here's a chance that he could probably be a 30-homer, 30-double guy like DeJong was. Yeah. But you're going to get the high strikeout rate. So, I feel like he would fit that. But, you know, I'm just not sold. So, the answer to Frank's question is I feel like that's the way that it would go as things stand right now.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, I don't like even thinking about Matt Carpenter as a cleanup guy. Not that I'm not saying like you're right. I'm not saying that he's not going to be better next year, but I have troubles seeing him as a cleanup guy. I think we'd all like to daydream that, you know, Dylan Carlson comes up and it does a Pujols situation, because Pujols, I'm sure by it, I don't know how long it took, but he was hitting cleanup in his rookie year. It took a while, probably a little bit to get him up there, but you know, that'd be great. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. You're right. I it'd be interesting if Colton has a year like he did last year. I feel like they should let him hit leadoff. I never really thought that until last year. He's kind of put all of his game together. And there's not any really solid options otherwise. I mean,
well, and you hit the nail on the head just a second ago with the guy that I would like to see lead off is Fowler at his best lead off, because that's where he's the most beneficial, because he sees so many pitches and he gets on base. But you saw what happened last year when he turned into an almost an automatic out at the beginning. And that was tough to watch. And that's where I love Fowler for what Fowler brings. And I just hope that on-base skill doesn't start eroding a little bit, because then he doesn't bring much. Yeah. But I do feel like they're going to try to be super athletic at the top of the lineup. And I think that probably – and I think that says a lot about Wong, and I think it says a lot about Edmund, you know, being in those spots.
Yeah, and I think Tommy Edmund, like I said, if he rotates out, but if he's like he was last year – and again, there's a lot to be said for him not having a huge track record yet, and you don't know. But if he could be like he was last year, I mean, he's going to hit second, I think, most of the time. I could see that. Yeah. I think that's a great place. If he and Wong are hitting 1-2, you know, that's kind of what we, you know, hoped for with Carpenter and Fowler. I mean, we still haven't really put that great top of the lineup together. But there were times last year it was clicking like that, you know, and putting people on for Goldschmidt. And if they can do that, you know, because as much as I've said, you know, I said earlier that I'm afraid that they take a half step back in defense and a half step back maybe in base running, all that. But if they could take a half step to a full step ahead in offense overall, I mean, if these guys can get back to league average or their career averages are a little bit better, you know, that counteracts a lot of that stuff. So, you know, I don't want to say that, you know, they have to be just as good as they were last year. I mean, these bats should be a little bit better. And if you put one and then at the top of the lineup from going from day one and they're producing, that's going to help the offense a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? And it's one of those to where I feel like you can expect quite a bit of an improvement with Goldschmidt this year, just because of the, you know, new surroundings, new ballpark, all the things that go into your new surroundings. I think that he'll hit well. I think that you're going to see how we were talking about Fowler. I think you're going to see the reverse with Carpenter. I think that you're going to see a bounce back because it can't get much worse, to where you feel like you're going to see maybe a bounce back with Fowler because it can't get much better. You know, I think that you're going to see him hit a little bit. And maybe, you know, you have the table setters with the two younger guys. I think that that would be beneficial. But I think that you could not expect – I wouldn't be surprised to see an offensive step forward. I almost expect it, to be honest with you, with some of the big bats that will hit. I worry about some of the other ones, though. I feel like we're asking a lot out of Edmund to even come close to what he did last year. I think we're probably getting close to see what kind of player Wong is. Then it turns into, well, how much do we trust Molina, you know, to hit more? And, you know, it's the center field is going to be Bader, and you want to see a bounce back from him. You have that elite defense, but if the offense is like it is last year, he's going to stick out like a sore thumb again. You know, you can't really afford to have him. And I expect those kind of numbers to be the same. Maybe not 30 homer, 30 double type situation, but I think that you're going to get 25 homer power out of DeJong almost any season. I think we've seen it. So you kind of know what to expect there. But that's a lot of ifs.
Yeah.
And that's what worries me the most.
All right. Our last question, our last idea for a topic, I guess, comes from Ryan Hetzer. You'll find him at RDESChain19. On Twitter, he writes for the blog that goes along with the Two Birds on a Bat show, which, you know, that's Jim Cromer and Benjamin Molina and all those guys. So he's writing some stuff over there. And he's asking just generally about the outfield. I know we've talked a lot about it, but outfield analysis on the recent history decisions. Was last year's group deployed properly? How to handle the current overflow, Carlson, et cetera. I mean, you talk about the Cardinals these days, you're talking about the outfield, it feels like, just because of
what
the arms are. And, then, you know, especially you get into last year, was it done right? Probably not. I still think we should have seen more Lane Thomas. I think that they gave Harrison Bader probably a little bit too much rope. But I also think that by the end of the year, it felt like, you know, I mean, granted, Thomas was hurt by then and things of that nature, but it felt like by the end of the year, Mike Schilt was a little bit better about the outfield. Like, he had a better grasp of those guys. Fowler's going to play because, like you said, the contract is going to break a lot of ties. I mean, he's going to have to be pretty bad, I think. You know, granted, every week, every month that we play, if they play, is one week or month closer to the end of that contract. So there's a whole lot less of it. I mean, you're looking at just 2 years now. So maybe you start to being able to the point where you can absorb some of that cost and sit them. But, you know, I think we'd all like to see an outfield of Carlson, Thomas, and a Rosarena or something of that nature. And I think that would be fairly exciting to see, but it's going to come up with its own growing pains and things like that. And so, and you know, that's just, reality has has rules, you know, and one of those rules is if you pay so much money for a guy or you put in a whole lot of money, a whole lot of time on a guy like Harrison Bader, who still has a chance to get better, those guys have got to find some time to play too. So, I don't think I would have done the outfield the same way that, that they have been, but I understand that they've got a whole lot of variables in there and it's hard to make things work.
Yeah, yeah. Let me start with Bader on that. Bader last year ran into, and even, maybe even the year before last, he's running into the same situation that Colton Wong ran into. And that is, you know, elite defender that doesn't hit well, but can't be, but is his offense sticks out for being poor because other guys around him aren't hitting. I think that if Matt Carpenter was Matt Carpenter last year, you could swallow a bad season from Bader, you know, a little bit easier, or use it as a learning curve. I do think they were quick to pull the trigger, a little slow to pull the trigger on that, especially as well as Rosarena was performing in Memphis. I felt like they drugged that out a little longer than they had to. They obviously have their reasons, and you know, just like yeah, the narratives you were talking about, we may never know some of the reasoning behind that. I think that Thomas probably plays a lot. You know, the day he hits that slam and that triple, probably that stands out to me. But I mean, he showed a lot of power and has the past two seasons, and I feel like that's going to play. And I feel like he's Bader type athletic as well. You know, and so I feel like that's one of those situations where if he comes back healthy, we'll probably see a lot of it. But I do think they were slow to pull the trigger a little bit last year. As far as Carlson goes, I feel like they're saying very little about Carlson, not to build up any pressure on him, with the hopes that he's going to make that much of a substantial move. That I'm not saying open the season in St. Louis, but it would not surprise me if he's not far behind. And when he comes up, he'll probably play every day. You know, and that probably speaks volumes about what the outfield situation may look like. I mean, I could almost see him getting the first run if any of the guys that we deem a starter get hurt. You know, I fully expect him to start in Memphis unless he just does too much to where you just simply can't do it. We probably answered that question three or four times throughout the podcast already.
Yeah, and I agree with Carlson. I mean, he hasn't been at Memphis very long. You know, he played most of the year in Springfield. He played, two or three weeks in Memphis. So it's the patron player of the blog, patron prospect, the official prospect of the blog. I'm as much as wanting to see Dylan Carlson as anybody, but I'm not going to argue, even with a strong spring, depending on what everybody else does, but even with a strong spring, I'm not sure I'm going to be in that camp of, oh, the Cardinals are trying to hold down his value by not bringing him up until they get another year of control off of him. The Cardinals don't do that on a regular basis. And there are so many guys that I could see them saying, look, Carlson had a great spring, but we want to see him play a little bit more Memphis, and we want to sort out the guys that we have. We want to let Tyler O'Neill get a run. We want to let Randall Rosa get a run. And, you know, come May, come June, if he's still tearing the cover off the ball and people are struggling in the big leagues, then he comes up. But like you said, when he comes up, he's playing. I mean, he's not going to be Lane Thomas, where even if he has some good outing, he's going to sit for a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is, you know, or play once every seven or eight games. He's going to play every day. And that's a different dynamic. I mean, you have to be ready for him to play every day. And if they haven't sorted all their outfielders out, I just don't see that they're going to know that. They're going to know come the end of spring training that they could find that place for him yet. I think they're still going to have a lot of things that they want to see in season.
Mm-hmm. Memphis. Yeah. And you know, it's Mo has made the comment before that he can play all three outfield positions, but he feels like the one he's most suited for is right field. And that I think that says a lot. Just my take on Carlson. Last year when I saw him make his AA debut here in Tulsa, I felt like he was an athlete that could play center field that wasn't a center fielder. But you could see some things where you're just like, okay, I could see where he wouldn't be. He got beat on a few balls and turned around and made some athletic plays that were pretty impressive. And I was like, boy, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. That was early in the season. By the end of the season, I felt like he made leaps and bounds to where he was a center fielder and held his own and looked good doing it. Has a real strong arm, and his plate discipline is crazy good. And it's one of those where you watch and you're just like, all right, this is somebody that was kind of like Tavares, kind of like Wong, maybe better than Wong. But you knew that Wong that Colton Wong was not going to stay in the minor leagues for long. And I get that feeling about Carlson as well. Now I'm not so certain it's going to be the Tavares type expectation on his bat, but he can play. So I'm excited to see it as much as anybody, but I think they're going to put the dampers on it a little bit, and we may not see that until, you know, May or June.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, at least they'll give us something to be interested in, and something for people to get worked up and aggravated.
Well, yeah, I mean, between Carlson and you know, Justin Williams, and the Memphis outfield may be pretty good.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, you're getting to the point where having some of those guys have to play in Springfield just to have playing time, and they need to be almost in the major leagues. You know, I mean, that's why you've got to clear some of this stuff out. And I still think they will some, but
I agree. That's just too much. That's a lot of weight.
Yeah. We've gone almost an hour. We thought we'd have a shorter show, and every time I think that, we don't. but do want to spend just a few minutes, maybe, you know, giving a little bit of a wrap up on 2019. Here we are. We're recording this on the 30th, so we're just another day left of the month of the year. Before we, you know, flip into 2020, which sounds fairly futuristic. I remember turning the calendar to 2000. It doesn't seem like that was 20 years ago. 2019. And when you look back on that season, what are you going to remember out of it?
Oh man. There was such a weird element for me last year. In the fact that I'll start from the back and go forward to where I loved the Goldschmidt signing. So we'll say that at the beginning, but after they clinched and made the playoffs again, there was like this huge weight lifted off my shoulders to where it was like, hey, you're playing with house money now in the playoffs. Let's see what you can do. Let's still develop this pitching and just take this as this is where they belong, and this is going to be the start of another run. So them getting to be in the playoffs wasn't as gut-wrenching as it has been in the past to me. You know, like I remember 2012 to where,
right,
you know, losing the 3-1 lead to the Giants was gut-wrenching. You know, losing the series to, you know, 13 series to Boston, and you knew that it was Freeze's last run and all kinds of stuff to where those are the ones that really got me. And it was the off season was brutal. This just didn't seem like that. And I don't know if my sights are just set so high now that I expect them to get back. I love Schilt. That probably has a lot to do with it. That was probably to see Schilt succeed in the way that they did, to improve an area that I love so much in the base running and the defense, and to see that it makes such a difference where some people will say that it doesn't make that much difference, that you don't gain that many runs and wins by that improvement, showing that they can and they did, and they won the division. And some of the things that they succeeded on were the things that I thought Chicago was when Chicago got really young and athletic and was going first to third on anything hit to the outfield is when I felt like they turned the corner. You know, it's easy to do that when you have a Bryant and a Rizzo and stuff like that. Well, I felt like the Cardinals did that this year, to where they were taking those extra bases and they were putting the pressure on teams. That was fun to watch. I liked that. To see what Flaherty has become is another thing that's interesting, because then you may have a special starter on your hands. Where I thought that may be Reyes, it looks like it's going to be Flaherty. All the not to completely change the tune on this, but my expectations are so high on him that I'm really hoping that he's not the injury in spring. You know, one of those type of situations. But as far as 2019 goes, I just felt like they won with youth. I think the arrow's pointing up, and it was quite a memorable season.
Yeah, I think we remember, you know, getting back to the playoffs. And you're right, I was exactly the same way. It was like, you got to the playoffs, it was great. And, you know, and if they had lost to the Braves, I think it would have been okay. I mean, it would have been a little frustrating because you get to game five or whatever. But, you know, once they lost to the Nationals, I'd like to see them do a better job. I mean, it felt like they had a chance against the Nationals and the bats just didn't show up. But, yeah, you didn't feel like this team was a World Series team, I don't think. You felt like they were a good playoff team, a good team, and you were glad they got there. But you didn't really, at least I didn't, feel like, okay, they should win the World Series, or I really feel like they can win the World Series. And so when they didn't make it, it wasn't just gut-wrenching. It was disappointing, but like you said, not gut-wrenching. You know, I think we'll remember... I think that series in Wrigley is always going to be remembered, that 4-game sweep at the end.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the, you know, emergence of Tommy Edman. You know, overall, I think we'll just, you know, yeah, Mike Shildt did a good job. You got it. And first of all, we should also say congratulations to Mike Shildt from going from a man that wasn't dating anybody at all when he got the job to now being engaged. So, yes, he's not going to, or she get to Mike Shildt, you probably don't want him to wait around either. So, congratulations to the skipper for getting engaged this over Christmas break. You know, it's going to be interesting, because in 10 years, are you really going to remember much about this team? Except for Flaherty's dominance that second half, I don't know. I don't know if it stands out. Like, you know, it wasn't dominant like 2004. It didn't have, you know, playoff wins, the huge wins, like, you know, winning the series at 6-11. But it's the good thing about Cardinals is that some of these years where they win 90 games and they get into the playoffs, and they could even get to the NLCS, and they don't stand out because there's so many of those kind of years, you know, that we're so fortunate as fans to have this idea that 90 wins and a postseason appearance is almost expected. And hey, we enjoy it and we like it, but it's not going to stand out like it would for the Royals, you know, who go through so much of a drought. I mean, it's where they're really bad, you know, or other teams that struggle to make it to the, you know, to 500. And Cardinals have been very fortunate. And part of that is because they don't listen to us and go chasing after all the free agents. I think that they could do a little more of that, but it'd still be fine. But so it's, I mean, Flaherty being so dominant in the second half, I think is probably what you will remember, because you're going to see that in stats. And, you know, anytime a pitcher's doing well in the second half, they're going to put up a leaderboard, and Jack Flaherty's 0.91 ERA is going to be sitting right up there for 2019 for that second half. And if he becomes the pitcher that we, like you said, knock on all the wood, but if he becomes the pitcher that it looks like he's going to become, you know, we'll be able to say that's where it started. I think that may be the lasting carryover from this year. Because I don't, you know, I mean, maybe if Harrison Bader crashes and burns still, that we start to say, well, that's, you know, that's where that is. Hopefully we're not talking about the baby blues forever, but we might be. Remember, it's like, oh, remember when they tried that? That was that year. unfortunately, it sounds like I haven't heard anything about them giving up on it. So I guess they're going to have it for another couple of years. Yeah, I don't. 2019 was a good year. It was an enjoyable year. It was a year. I mean, I think we'll sometimes forget that they had to rally to win the division, that they struggled so much in May. But I just don't know that 3, 5, 10 years from now, a whole lot of it's going to stand out. And again, that's really because we're so fortunate in that excellence is sustained in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. That's kind of how I feel. I feel like it was a good starting point to get back, and it's probably selfish of us to say, but I feel like there are better things to come.
Yeah. I think it gave us some hope, if nothing else. I don't know that the off season has helped that hope a lot, but the other teams have, like we said, that it feels like the Cardinals still feel like the favorite right now, and. Again, lots of things can go wrong, injuries, bad years, whatever. But when you look at it on paper, you see this team still looks like a 90, 91, 92 win team probably. And that should be enough for another playoff.
Yep, let's hope.
Let's hope. That's all you can hope for. So with that, we'll put a wrap on 2019 and on season 5 of Meet Me at Mutual. We'll be back at you maybe another week or two. We'll definitely be back with you around the time of the winter warm-up, which is, what, the 17th, 18th, 19th, mm-hmm. I think, of yep. January. So we'll probably do a show around there, unless the Cardinals do something between now and then. That may be the next time when we kick off season 6. So until then, again, we thank you for hanging with us this year, and we look forward for you to stay with us in 2020. So for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Thank you for everything. Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.